This is Paul Nobles from Eat to Perform, and I am here once again with our Director of Coaching, Becky Ivara. Becky, do you want to say hello to everyone?
Hi, everybody. We're so glad that you took the time out today to meet with us and listen to our topic.
So, for people that are just listening to the podcast, which typically is, anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 people. You're probably not watching us, but we do these live with clients. And today's topic is actually a repeat of a topic that we were doing for Eat Perform Health, where we went into the history of weight loss medication. And since that time, well, actually, for some reason, the internet ate that podcast, so it never made the light of day. So we're redoing that now. And since that time, there have been, it seems like these weight loss medication companies are popping up left and right. And I have nothing but family members like texting me and asking me all these questions. So it just seems to. That the best way to address it is just to make this podcast, right? And so I want to address, so I just want to start here that we do have the ability for our clients to get weight loss medication through Eat to Perform Health. And so right now we have somewhere right at 500 people that use Eat to Perform Health, and not all of them are on weight loss medication. In fact, the vast majority are not. Most people use Eat to Perform Health from the standpoint of hormones and trying to kind of change their hormone profile. And so that's something that we've been really excited about. But I do think that there's a lot of people preying on people with weight loss medication. And one thing that I see people preying on, well, there's actually two. And I wrote an article about this. But the two things that people I see preying on people about is the concept of food noise and the idea of insulin sensitivity. And I just want to walk through why these messages resonate with people or make them feel better about taking weight loss medication, because there still is a certain stigma, there still is a certain shame. I think that that will go away over time. I just believe that one, I think there's kind of this extreme out there, and we're seeing this a lot of time in the fitness world where, you have people like Jillian Michaels sort of cherry-picking some evidence. And not that, some of the things that she's saying aren't correct, but they're just incomplete. And as an example, one of the things that I see for weight loss is the tendency for people to want to go to the highest doses as soon as possible to lose the most weight in the shortest amount of time. There's so many problems with that. But what I can tell you is through Eat to Perform Health and many of these other companies that are popping up left and right, is that you don't have to be at the highest doses, right? Like essentially, what food noise is, and people take issue with the fact that I say it's hunger, which it is, right? So the concept of food noise, that's only a recent thing. Someone said it, and then they're like, "Oh my God, people are really responding to this idea." Well, they're responding to the idea because it takes the responsibility away from them. And what I'm trying to do is empower people by giving them better information. And so, how do I know that food noise, air quotes, is hunger? It's because you're taking a hunger suppressant. That's what it is, right? So, the way that the medication works, it delays gastric emptying, which sends a signal to your brain that you are full when you are simply just not emptying your stomach the way you would if you didn't have this medication, right? And then the higher the dose, the more suppression you get, which means that you will become more constipated, more nauseous. You'll deal with, what is it, acid reflux, things of that nature, right? So, in an ideal world, you're taking the lowest dose possible, right? So, I have an example recently where we had someone taking tirzepatide, and that person in about 2 months is down right at 20 pounds, at the lowest dose. I think they upped the dose the last couple weeks on the direction of their doctor, from 25, milliliters to 30 milliliters, but nowhere near the levels that Wegovy and Zepbound are and things of this nature. And the reason why people are very tempted to go to, well, there's the want to, there's a certain amount of pain related to weight loss, right? Mentally, physically, you just want to sort of be done with it and move on to the rest of your life. The reality is that most people that are smart about nutrition, have good habits, have good fitness, things of this nature, they manage their weight their whole life, and they don't necessarily always do it at super low calories. And the problem that you're going to have, and this is one of the reasons, because, obviously, if you're selling medication, I think, if you're selling medication with high integrity, especially for weight loss, you would want to provide people a level of fitness and nutrition that allows them to get off the medication at a certain point, right? And we've seen many cases where, somebody comes to us at 250 pounds, loses 70 pounds, and then now they can get off of high blood pressure medication, or they can get off of, statins or something of this nature. This is similar in that way, right? In fact, we don't even really support long-term use. And the reason why we don't support long-term use is because your body just adjusts to it. So, they have studies that have already shown that around, just over a year, you're now making this house payment for weight loss medication that is ineffective. And more importantly, is that now you've established like this new lower number. And let's just for example, give that newer lower number a calorie point. Let's say that calorie point is 1200, right? Now, are you prone to gain weight if you're eating 1500? Yes, is the answer, right? So you're now have the ability to store fat, gain weight at a much lower calorie point. And that's the reason why you have to view all of this as cycles, so that you can upregulate your metabolism and do things the correct way. What happens for most people is they want kind of this fairy tale idea where they'll never manage their weight the rest of their life once they've lost the 70 to 80 pounds. And what happens in that scenario is that most of those people, when they lose 70 to 80 pounds, they get very attached to that number, right? And I'm using 70 to 80 because it just gives, but it could be 50, it could be 20, right? What I'm counseling my friend that has lost 20 pounds, and they still have about, a month and a half. It looks like, yeah, it's probably a month right now. I think they wanted to stop mid-May. What I keep telling him is keep pushing, right? If he can get to 25, that's great, because there's gonna be some weight gain when you naturally move calories up, right? Now, can you affect that by just going crazy in the gym? I don't personally like slowly moving calories up, because what happens is that you it, it If you get to the place where you get married to the 25 pounds or 20 pounds of loss, and you don't allow for some weight gain in the process mentally, what can happen in that situation, and we've all been there, is that the wheels just come off, right? And I talked a lot about this, I think most people know this, and I think this is a good way to describe the problem is my father has always struggled with the concept of gambling, and he has not done well in that scenario. And most gambling, obviously, the house has an edge on you and almost nobody wins. But as most people know, a lot of the information that derived from Eat to Perform kind of came from my analytics that all started as a professional poker player. So I was a profitable poker player for roughly 15 years. That was my job, right? And my dad was always baffled by how I could do it, right? He could literally see me, playing online poker as an example, and not understand the decisions I was making. But the thing that changed, the thing that nothing has changed. He's still that same person. And I'll tell you why in just a second. But what he was always baffled by was the concept of tilt and how I never went on tilt. And the reason why I never went on tilt is because I had an edge over the game. And all of you, if you do Eat to Perform, have an edge over the game because you understand how nutrition works. We're giving you all the little details, right? The concept of food noise or believing that your insulin sensitivity is doing the magic is the problem that my dad has. And the problem why he goes on tilt, because now all of a sudden you have this fairy tale idea, like, the blackjack dealer or the dealer has bad mojo or all of these things that gamblers say that to themselves as the casinos are full and nobody's going to the cashier, right? Because people have lucky hats and rabbit foot and all these other things that they equip. That it's not the fact that the dealer has bad mojo or you left your rabbit foot at home. It's the fact that the casino has an edge over you, right? And so if you play certain games, so that's why, in poker, you actually can have an edge because you're not playing against the casino. You're playing against the intelligence of the other people at the table. So when I started doing what ultimately became Eat to Perform and started informing myself in a way that I did not know, I was like, I think most people would want to know this, right? And I think for many of you, what I didn't necessarily anticipate, I thought everyone would want to know this, but actually, people are more comforted with the idea of food noise and that it's insulin sensitivity because it comes with less judgment. There's this idea that obesity is a disease. I totally agree with obesity as a disease, but you have to also understand the same thing that I said earlier, right? Does your family history have, high blood pressure? They might, right? But can you affect that through nutrition and fitness? And the answer is yes, right? So when you look at those people that have that history, there is a genetic profile that probably makes them predisposed to that. But what you can do is, like, for instance, I'm on blood pressure medication. I fought it for 10 years, right? My dad is on a dose that's 8 times higher, right? And he eats like a 13-year-old, even though his son is an expert on nutrition, right? And, at one point he had some health issues and he used Eat to Perform meals and he went into his doctor and his doctor was like, I don't know what you're doing, But it's working, man, because like literally everything changed since your last blood profile. And he's like, well, my son, has this nutrition company. I started eating those meals, and it's really helped. I now realize I was eating a lot, and now I'm able to manage my hunger a little bit better because I'm consistently staying fed rather than starving and then over consuming 2,000, 3,000 calories in one sitting, which honestly, I've seen him do, and it's just like amazing to watch, right? It's like, why wouldn't you just be a little bit more conscious of the things you do? But once again, if you believe that, it's your lucky hat or it's a rabbit foot, or and don't get me wrong, like I'll be honest with you, I still wear, like, for instance, I have a Pete Maravich jersey. And for some reason, during tournaments, I didn't do well in those tournaments. And so I quit wearing the Pete Maravich jersey. It doesn't hurt me, right? So I'm a little superstitious also, but when you start to believe in the fairy tales that other people tell you, and don't get me wrong, Weight Watchers uses it fairly freely, the concept of food noise. I wish they used the word hunger because that's what it is. But I think if you ask them, they would say, yes, we're talking about hunger. What happens is you have other companies that are using these words against you to take away your power and sell you something for a lot of money, right? And what you're going to find is that food noise is, in fact, hunger. And, when you allow yourself to believe in magic and fairy tales and all these different things. Now, is it helpful for fat loss, as an example? I don't think it's actually very helpful. I don't have a lot of statistics in front of me or anything like this, but I don't think it's actually super helpful for weight loss to have your insulin sensitivity increase, but it is for fat loss. And let me explain to you why. Because what insulin sensitivity does, it allows your body to store your nutrients more effectively, right? So otherwise, if you're insulin resistant, your nutrients are sort of standing on the outside in your body and not storing the way that is most efficient and would be better for you, right? And so, yes, it would be favorable for fat loss. How much? Maybe a couple pounds, right? It sort of depends on, what is your capacity for building muscle in the first place, or at least not storing it as fat, right? Even if let's say that your testosterone is low, which is the case for many women. You might not have the ability to build muscle in that instance, but it would still be absorbed more efficiently and allow your muscle to heal, right? So, insulin sensitivity is positive, but it's not positive from the standpoint of gaining 10 pounds of muscle, like because you started taking these weight loss medications, especially in eating in a deficit, right? It's very difficult to add any muscle. What we're really trying to do with the way that we've, made our program is to keep that muscle atrophy as low as possible, right? And so I just wanted to address that in the beginning. And I also, would encourage anybody to ask questions. We did get a lot of questions last time, and then it did help a lot with the direction of the podcast. So one of the things that we went over in the last podcast that I think was really super important was this idea that the medications are new. And there's so much we don't know. And of course, there's always things that we don't know, but they're not new, right? They've been used to treat diabetes for a long time. And in fact, if you look at something like liraglutide, which is Trulicity, I believe Trulicity's been on the market for something in the order of about 15 years, right? Ozempic has been on the market for 7 to 8 years. And but most of it was to treat diabetes. Now they did know that these had weight loss benefits because they saw it, right, from all the clients and things of this nature. And I remember even, I want to say it was like 10 years ago, 60 Minutes talking about the possibility that these medications could be game changers for people. This is where, like, your average fitness influencer, or I really struggle with this idea that it's not hard, right? Because you're still eating less, right? Does food allow for a level of comfort for your brain? Sure. As an example, we know that carbohydrates in moderate amounts does allow for a more healthy brain. It was interesting, listening to Jillian Michaels talk about the fact that these medications lend itself to suicidal ideation in some people. And she's like, "We don't know why." And I was like, I think we do know why. We've known why for a long time. We've known that people with eating disorders and people that eat chronically low calories change their brain chemistry so much that, and there is nothing but studies. You could spend days on PubMed that with looking for studies that will provide you evidence that eating chronically low affects your brain chemistry negatively to the point where it makes you more prone to mental health issues and things of this nature. Now, none of this is fun to talk about. None of this is something that I can just sell you like this fairy tale, right? And there's no question that people buy from me less because I'm telling you the truth. Right? Because the truth is sort of complicated, right? It's like this gray area. And so the reason why Jillian Michaels doesn't tell the truth about suicidal ideation and why we don't know is because she actually is selling, eating in a deficit most of the time. And she probably does know there's a strong connection to, and I know that because she talked about her mother, who's a psychologist, talking about why people need help with, the psychological impacts. It's so funny because there's so many things that I agree with what she's talking about in terms of people's habits and things of this nature, but she's always looking at from a point of food restriction. And then if you know how she got to prominence, right? And you know how negatively those people were affected. Oh, by the way, right? If you go back and start Googling suicide from what was the show? Becky, what was the show called? Biggest Loser. Suicides from Biggest Loser, the amount of people that committed suicide was very high, right? And so you start messing with people's brain chemistry. This is why we always make the case for, not being in these long deficits, not under eating most of the time. And, frankly, I say this a lot, and you can take issue with this if you would like. And I'm open to anyone's views on this that have changed my mind. But there's a certain amount of people that feel bad about the way that they've treated their body and they want to be punished. This is sort of the avenue that leads you in the direction of eating disorders or leads you in the direction of chronic dieting and things of this nature. A lot of these things, they don't get brought up when, you're on your 15th Whole30 in the last, year and a half, right? And all the people that are eating clean when in reality they're eating 1100 calories a day, right? And there's all this what happens a lot in the nutrition and fitness world is there is this suffer porn mentality, right? Where you are being conditioned to suffer as much as possible because many of these people that need that suffering in their life to quiet the noise in their head, right? They're putting it out as the solution when in fact it's actually problematic for a lot of people. One thing, and when we talk about history of weight loss medication, we can't talk about history of weight loss medication without talking about the history of dieting in general, right? And when we talk about the history of dieting, one, there is not a lot of people talking about reverse dieting or normalizing calories or things of this nature. But dieting is the one thing that you buy that almost no one holds themselves responsible for, right? It always, we never point the thing at the diet. We were the first people to tell you need to analyze the diet and the program that is failing you rather than you failing the program. But there have been statistics and studies that show this. And there's lots of degrees to success, right? But in this instance, what success was defined as was maintaining your dieting weight, right? Within a few pounds. And using that parameter, what they found was most people gained the weight back with interest, and only 2 to 3% actually maintain their weight within that realm of or that range of weight gain or weight loss, right? Further that, you can now have an assumption that within that 3%, not everyone has a healthy approach to maintaining that weight loss. Right? We know that many of people, especially many eat performers, come to us from an under-eating background. Why? Because they were chronically dieting for long periods of time. So why don't we support, long deficits for weight loss medication? The exact same reason we don't support it for people that aren't using weight loss medication. All the weight loss medication does is allow you better diet adherence because you're not hungry all the time, right? And so if we can get away from this idea that it's like this magical thing that's working, it's actually better because it puts more power in your hands, right? And frankly, I don't love the idea of that study, which gets quoted often and quoted by me, frankly. I don't love the idea that, success is defined simply by a lower range of whatever your weight had been. Because frankly, there's a lot of people that think that they need to be 120 pounds. We had a post from Kristen Bartlett that emphasized this really well, right? She spent a lot of time at about 120 pounds and, got really frustrated with the chronic dieting and lack of energy and things of this nature. And so she started to perform, I want to say something like 7 to 8 years ago. And she posted this picture of, just her with muscle, 33 pounds more. Is that success? I would argue it is, right? She's probably actually leaner now than she was before, because what happens in that instance is that if you're not eating enough to support protein synthesis, what happens is that you actually maintain a higher body fat percentage than you would if you were building more muscle along the way. And you can look at that picture and you can just see that she has built a lot of really solid muscle, which, by the way, is beneficial for longevity of life. And that's where I think, the people that are in the fitness world or the people in the world where, we're chastising these people taking these medications, it's sort of missing the benefit for longevity of life for most of these people. And then the other health benefits that they do get from weighing less, right? And so, if we're only pointing at the outliers about, oh, there's side effects and things of this nature, you can manage those things. What you can't manage is not taking the medication and then not managing your weight along the way, and then being more prone to heart disease and being more prone to all these different things. Am I an advocate for fitness? The site is called Eat to Perform. Nothing has changed related to our basic idea, but we always said if the science presented itself, we were going to listen to that science and adjust. If you look at, one, we're not one of these programs that changes like every single year, like your Weight Watchers and your Noom's, and they got a new thing because they need a marketing program, right? No, the basic concept of Eat to Perform has not changed for 13 years, right? It's basically been you need to be in cycles. What we've done though is we've taken those cycles and made them better over time. Most of you know that as AP. We used to not do AP. Deficits were longer, deficits were shorter. We've tried a lot of things over the last 13 years. We haven't changed much in the last 5 years. And if you go, well, what made a difference in the last 5 years? Well, it's the app, right? We got more data from all of you that allowed us to take our approach and make it better. But getting back to this idea that all of this is new and it's all experimental and you need to be careful. You should always be careful. There is always some level of risk that you have to manage within your head that's going to say, I should take this or I shouldn't. I will say, along with the fitness and other people, there is a certain amount of people with thyroid conditions or thyroid history of thyroid cancer that can't take the medication. There are, other examples where the doctor won't prescribe it for you. But many of those people, they're also the zealots related to why people shouldn't be taking this because they can't, right? And so because they can't, they don't want you to take it. Right? It's this weird world that we live in with dieting that there can't be different solutions for different people, right? But there is always a scenario where if you continuously make homeostasis work in the direction of less, it will. And as you start to move it into an area where it's more, it won't. It'll become way more dynamic. Your metabolism starts working more effectively and things of that nature. And so I feel like I covered virtually everything that we went over last time. But Becky, can you give me some ideas what we might have missed there? Because I think that, I mean, well, I know it took longer to talk, but there was a lot of back and forth.
The only thing that I can think of is if you want to touch on the importance of making sure that when they go into, they're thinking about doing the weight loss meds, then they don't come into it from a dieting background and what that may or may not do for them as they go through a fat loss cycle, even with medication.
Yeah, so, it's known that there are non-responders, right? And what's not known, right, is that most of those people are coming to weight loss medication dieting, right? And so if you know that the calories are important in this instance, and this is why it's so damaging when people say calories don't matter, right? Because calories do matter and they matter quite a bit. And the reason why we know this is because there's many people that have been chronically dieting for a long period of time. They have not, normalized calories in that process, and therefore they don't respond to dieting because of course they don't, right? It's just a math equation, and you try to subtract from zero and you can't go lower than zero, right? Or, 1,000 as an example, which many people eat on a daily basis, it's just very, very difficult to lose weight continuously at those numbers because what ends up happening is your body adjusts. In reality, there are a lot of people that that say, look, let's be real, nobody's eating 1,000 calories a day, and they're not wrong, right? But what they are missing is that because those people are eating, let's say that as an example, right? You're eating 1,000 calories a day, and you've been eating 1,000 calories a day for 2 years, and in that time you eat only 2,000 calories one day, right? Well, now you've moved your calorie average up, let's just say 175 calories a day, right? And you're not losing weight, and you're going, well, yeah, because it's that 2,000 calorie day. No, it's because you're trying to squeeze blood out of a rock, right? And you're not allowing your body to work the way that it should be. And so if you come from a clean eating background, right, where you haven't tracked your calories and things of this nature, you want to go through a reverse before you start fat loss, right? Now, that said, I do think there are going to be many of you that do qualify for these medications. A doctor prescribes them for you, and you find out you're a non-responder. And the reason why is because once you start tracking these calories, you're going to realize you've been under-eating for quite some time, right? And so you have to factor that in mentally, and sometimes the only way you can learn, right, is, and I'm this way, right? I need to be shown. And I think many of you need to be shown. And so if you have to buy weight loss medication to see that you are under-eating, it's not the end of the world. You have the rest of your life to figure this out. And once again, we're providing you with the only answer that exists, right? That you're going to need to upregulate your metabolism probably for a while, and then you'll become a responder to weight loss medication. But this idea that you just need to diet harder or suffer more, or all those videos are inspiring. I watch the David Goggins videos too, right? And it's him against the world, right? It's like, I mean, your solution is probably a good solution for a lot of people that are dealing with depression and things of this nature, and they feel alone and they feel helpless, and he's providing them with some level of power in that way. I like that message. I believe in empowering people, but there does come a point where just doing more becomes ineffective, just eating less becomes ineffective. And so you just have to be conscious of this stuff. And then, let's be honest about what is probably going to happen for a lot of people, and what we've already seen, because we've been doing this for, probably a year and a half now. We've seen people on their second round, right? They came to us, they wanted support, they saw, and now, year and a half later, they're doing another one to go a little lower. That is the basis for E to perform, right? And so, if you want to just get to a weight and stay at that weight forever, I think what you're going to find is that just does not work. It's way better to manage your weight, allow for a little bit of weight loss, for weight loss medication. If you've lost a massive amount of weight, 40 to 50 pounds, you probably should expect to gain back 10 to 15 pounds over a course of a year and a half, right? And as long as you're being responsible about it and not taking a trip to Fucketville, right? Like, you're gonna be fine. And then you can come back. And then if your goal is to get a little bit lower, it might be able to help you do that, right? But for a lot of people, what I think is going to happen is they're going to, lose 50 pounds, gain 15, and they might lose 20, right? They don't necessarily need to lose 30 or 40. Now it becomes much more about weight management. And so that is one of the evolutions of Eat to Perform. I will admit that. Because people would say to me, and I was doing a great job doing it, where can you do eat to perform and not be in a deficit? And the answer is 100%, right? But the amount of effort required is just not going to be similar when you're 30 compared to when you're 90. So does that mean that you will have to manage your weight? I mean, recently, I talked about my fat loss cycle, I think in September. Fat loss one. Previous to that, I hadn't done fat loss for 7 years, right? And because to me, to talk about this, I have to be kind of an outlier. I'm not sure I feel that responsibility anymore. I actually think Sarah Hoffman, or Sarah Krebs actually, is probably a better example of what it looks like for most people, where, she spends most of her time at a certain amount of weight, right? Now, she doesn't need weight loss medication because, she's really only dealing with like a 10-pound fluctuation or whatever. And so, she's willing to be uncomfortable for 6 weeks, but that 6 weeks buys her a year of freedom or a year and a half of freedom. What gets lost in the conversations from Sarah are the week 52 discussions or week 64 discussions where she hasn't been dieting that whole time, right? And she's showing you how it works, right? And a lot of people look at Sarah and go, well, I can't work out that much. Sarah does not work out as much as you think she is, right? She posts these pictures and she posts these things showing you that workouts need to be part of the equation. But I can tell you personally that I manage my weight, without that level of weightlifting or whatever. But Sarah does not work out 6, 7 a week, 3 hours a day. She works out, half hour to 45 minutes. She uses the Eat Perform templates. She works out 4 days a week, right? And so she might work out a fifth day a week. I know she does play pickleball occasionally, which, once again, I might have to make a trip down to Houston just to see what that's like. But yeah, I think when you embrace activity as a tool in your weight management scenario, then you can see just the power. And in fact, studies have 100% shown that a calorie deficit is most effective for weight loss. What studies have also shown, which is very interesting, is that if you want to maintain your weight loss, that's when exercise becomes a big component, right? And it becomes even more effective from what we've seen when you're using a calorie, not surplus, but like, maybe an occasional surplus, but we call that recomp, right? And that's also fat loss, right? Because when you are building muscle, muscle's not fat, right? And so I'm going to end on this note because, I think it's important. There was a study that came out recently, and within the scientific community, a lot of us had sort of, we had kind of we kind of knew that this was the case, right? That if you were in a calorie deficit, you were improving insulin sensitivity. And what it proved was that if you're fasting in and of itself does not improve insulin sensitivity. The insulin sensitivity comes when you're using it from the standpoint of a deficit. But what they proved in the study was that insulin sensitivity stayed the same related to calories going up or down. In down, both were improved insulin sensitivity. And then when up, calories were higher, insulin sensitivity was less in both groups, right? And so this idea of magic, right? Once again, we keep buying into this magic fairy tale idea. and it keeps it's like the Bugs Bunny thing, right? It's like I should have taken a left at Albuquerque. You keep not taking a left at Albuquerque. You keep moving in the direction of the magic and the fairy tales. One thing I just want to say about insulin sensitivity, I talked about it a little bit earlier, but I wanted to like just zip this up, is that when you are eating more and you're moving more towards performance or recomp or eating in a slight surplus occasionally, now you are more prone to building and holding muscle, right? And so, is there benefit for occasionally cleaning things up, running a little fat loss cycle, mini cut, things of this nature? Yes, because it improves insulin sensitivity and allows you to build muscle easier, which is not fat. So that is a fat loss approach, right? So you are addressing fat loss. So when you're in PR, right, and you let things go too loose and you don't track for a month, 2 months, things of this nature, are you affecting fat loss positively in that instance? Probably not, right? Because you're allowing yourself, I mean, there is a case actually that you are, right? Because a lot of the time we often get too attached to the scale and we don't allow ourselves to gain a little bit of weight. And just having a little bit of weight on you does allow you to build a little bit more muscle, but it has to work with some level of insulin resist, not insulin resistance, but resistance training, workouts, things of that nature, right? So hopefully this was helpful. I do know that there's a certain amount of people within our community that don't feel like it's a good fit to talk about weight loss medication. In my mind, those people don't understand my motivations in the first place because, I am about helping people mostly where they're at, but also I'm not going to ignore things that are completely effective, right? These things work, and there's reasons why, these things are different than, we've never really, supported keto or fasting in the way that other people do for these drastic calorie cuts and things of this nature, and 3 days of fasting and all this other type of stuff. But this is the one we do support because we believe the science behind it, is necessary that we do, right? And just because you can do eat to perform without them, it doesn't make you superior to the people that need a bridge to get to the level that, and I just want to say this to you, if you feel that way, please consider an empathetic approach, right? Where there's less shame. There's just enough of that in this world, whether it's the gym, whether it's dieting, where we need more empathy for people struggling for many reasons, right? And you don't know what those reasons are. So your levels of judgment on that, just because you have lived this life where you have managed your weight most of the time, don't we want to bring more people into the tent, right? Like if you want to personalize it, you'll pay less taxes. Right? You'll pay less taxes if the most of us are more healthy. And if people need weight loss, if people need weight loss medication to get as a bridge, right? But we also need to be moving them in direction of support. So if you're talking to someone, say, what level of support are you getting? I'm not really talking about anybody. The minute you get off of those, if you're using it to just eat less pizza, what you're going to find is when you're off of the medications for whatever reason, but many people don't want to stay on these medications forever, and they become ineffective, a little bit over a year. So people are like, well, why am I even taking this? Why am I spending if I'm not losing weight? Yes. Yes, that's what we've been telling you, right? If you have a layer of support, if you're addressing habits and fitness, now all of a sudden we're moving this in the right direction. Are people going to abuse this 100%? Right? Just like people abuse everything when they buy into these concepts of magic and fairy tale and listen to people that are trying to sell them that they're broken, right? I know that we don't sell nearly as well. It was very difficult for me when Noom came out and started telling people with a line, here's how much you can lose, based on, the time period and this and that. And then if you did these three things, you can lose even this much more. And there's no way they could build a graph based on that. And I said that over and over and over at the time, right? And all these people who've been chronically dieting most of their life with this idea that they could lose 50 pounds, guess what? They didn't lose 50 pounds. So they bought into the magic graph, right? That was telling them something that they wanted to hear, but they should have taken a left at Albuquerque and they should have listened to the truth. And the truth does not sell well, right? And the fact that you're here, the fact that you're listening, the fact that you're understanding that there's all these tools that you can use is positive. Do I eat lower carb? Yes, it's 2 days in the Eat to Perform plan. Do I fast? Actually, yes, I enjoy fasting, but it's not magic. I just like to eat bigger meals, right? And so those meals, sometimes it's just, for some people, it's just a little bit of a different. We didn't really talk about side effects. I've written so many articles about side effects, but we did talk about it a little bit. I will say that if you're taking weight loss medication and you're fasting, you're probably going to struggle because of how the medications work. That'll make you more nauseous, deal with more acid reflux. You'll have heartburn all the time. You're way better off eating whatever calories that the program provides you over smaller meals. So that would be an instance where I would not fast, right? I would always want to keep a little bit of food in my stomach. And also, I'm a big advocate for kefir in that instance as a probiotic. I don't actually like some probiotics like seed and things of this nature from my experience when I did semaglutide in September. So once again, you can probably find all those things just going to the Eat to Perform page and using search. I hesitate to send you to search on Facebook because you're gonna find all level of wackiness. But if you can, stick to the Eat to Perform stuff, you're gonna find some pretty good information that's all science-based. So I appreciate everybody being here. And we'll talk to you later. Bye now.